I'm delighted talking to Stuart Mills, who's a double Lakeland 100 winner. And this year he beat his original time from 2010 by almost 2 hours, which I think is fantastic. And I'm really curious to see how he's managed to do that to improve his time over the last 2 years. I originally became aware of Stuart after listening to the West Highland Way podcast, and I was fascinated by some of the ideas that he had towards training and racing, and we'll probably come to those as part of the podcast. I'll just hand over to Stuart to say hello.
Hi Tim.
Hi Stuart. Well, I'm delighted to chat to you, and during the course of the podcast there's been lots of questions that I'm itching to ask you in relation to my own training, and also hopefully for our listeners out there. So this year you're running the Lakeland 100 again. And obviously you've won it. Congratulations. What are your thoughts, sort of, you know, a few weeks after the event, about the Lakeland 100?
Well, I've actually I've raced the Lakeland 100 three times. So I did it in 2010, and that was the first time, and I won it that year. And then went back in 2012, got fifth, and then won it again this year. And it was one of those special races which there's something unique about it. It's got a real community feeling to it. There's, you know, when you're part of the Lakeland 100 or the Lakeland 50, you feel part of a community, and I think that's quite a special feature of the race.
Yeah, I was supposed to run the 50 this year, but had to drop out because of holiday commitments. Yeah, how does the Lakeland 50 100 differ to sort of some of the other races that you've run in the UK or even abroad in terms of numbers or the atmosphere that you mentioned there?
Well, I've done the Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, which is a 100-miler, and in terms of, the atmosphere there is quite amazing, but it's quite a different atmosphere because the numbers are huge. There's 2,500 people that do the 100-miler, and then there's another 3,000 or 4,000 that do the other races, the CCC and the other races. So it's it really takes over the whole town. Whereas the Lakeland 100, the numbers aren't as great, although, you know, there's about 300 do the 100-miler and about 550 do the 50-miler. So, you know, there's plenty of people there to create the atmosphere, but it's just a great event. I think what really helps is being in the Lake District. It's a real challenge, the climbs you do, the conditions underfoot. So it's a challenge there, but then you've got the scenery, you know, when you're on top of the hills and you're just looking at the lakes. It's quite a great experience.
And I noticed you ran the West Highland Way earlier in the year.
The
Highland Fling. And that's more of perhaps a runnable route than the Lakeland 50 or the Lakeland 100. Would you describe it as a particularly quick course, the Lakeland 100, or do you challenge it?
No, it's quite a slow course. If you look at what I did this year, was 22 hours 17. That's called the Lakeland 100, it's actually 105 miles, but still 22 hours and 17 minutes isn't particularly quick for 105 miles, but it is on that course. So, you know, you're climbing up to 600 metres, three or four times over the 105 miles, and then the conditions underfoot, although this year it was very, very dry, but it's quite rocky, and so you have to really watch where you're running. So it is a lot slower than, say, some of the other 100-milers. Like down where I live in Sussex, we've got the South Downs Way 50, which, you know, the winning time for that was 15:40, and the North Downs Way was about 15:40 as well. So you can see the big difference between 15 hours and 22 hours.
And was the Lakeland 100 your sort of A race for this year in terms of, you know, your racing priorities?
Yeah, what I do, I've been doing ultra running for 5 years now, since 2008, and I don't race that much each year. I tend to target about 7 races, and I decide which is the key race. And so, because this was the key race, you know, I target my training, I target my preparation, so I peak for that one race. So that was basically it. Yeah. So although I do other races, like I did the Highland Fling, which, you know, whenever I'm on a start line, I'm in good shape and I'm very competitive and aim to perform well. I only tend to aim to peak once or twice a year.
Yeah, I was having a look at some of your race results, and you certainly do very, very well in the races that you do. And I mean, a lot of the times you finish in first, and if you're not first, then you're second. One of the things I'm curious about as well, Stuart, is you mentioned there that you transitioned to trail running and ultra running. What were you doing before that, and then what made you look to sort of transition towards trail running and ultra running?
I've been running for 35 years. And, you know, I actually did my first marathon when I was 17 years old, so quite a few years ago now. And then I had periods where I did road cycling and I did Ironman and triathlon, stuff like that. So I sort of always been doing endurance sport, got back into running and did trail. I sort of discovered trail marathons around 2001. And so I've done about, I think I counted up the other day, 29 trail marathons since 2001. And then sort of the next step, what's the next step? And a few guys at work were planning to do an ultra in 2008. And I thought, oh, that's a good opportunity. So I sort of just stumbled into it. But having always done endurance, like when you do Ironman events, I was, you know, around 10 and a half hours around there. So I was used to exercising, you know, for 10 hours. So started off doing 50-mile ultras, and it was actually less than an Ironman, so it wasn't so daunting in that way, that respect, that I'm going to be exercising for 7, 8, 9 hours.
Yeah, one of the things I remember listening to in the podcast of the West Highland Way, you'd mentioned that you often only do, I'd say only do 40-mile weeks, but you did preface at the start of the podcast to remind everybody that you'd run for 35 years and had an absolutely huge endurance base. And that's one of the things I'd like to touch on a little bit as part of the podcast, because I'm quite new to running, and although I can run reasonably quickly, I don't think I've got that huge aerobic base. Is that a big part of your running still now, that you've built up that aerobic base over the years?
Yes, I tend to rely on that 35 years of running, and what I achieve in my ultra running is primary from that background. Well, the physical conditioning is from that 35 years of running. I still don't tend to do the big mileage, which a lot of people will do. I have increased it slightly, but still it's typically no more than 45 miles a week on average. And it is, I'm relying on those years and years of running. But what those years and years of running have done is, one, it's given me sort of a little bit of resilience in the legs, and so they've got the sort of muscular endurance, although they still suffer from sort of really muscle damage in 100 milers. I think if anyone gets around the 100 mile course in the Lake District and doesn't have muscle damage, something's wrong. So they still do suffer from muscle damage, but I can tend to persevere and get through it. And in addition, what it's also done, these thousands and thousands of miles, I think I'm up to about 42,000 miles of running, it's developed my running economy. So that's how much oxygen I use to run at a certain speed, and that's really my efficiency is what is probably my best attribute, my best physical attribute.
I'm pleased you brought that up, because in terms of where I'm at with my training, I think I mentioned before the call, I'm reading a book by, I've read a book by Keith Livingstone that expands on the ideas of Arthur Lydiard, both guys from New Zealand as well. And one of the things I've learned from that book as a new runner is that although I did have some speed, it was based off an anaerobic system with some aerobic. And, I mean, Arthur Lydiard, you know, even going back into the 80s, was having 1,500 5K runners running over 100 miles a week to build up a substantial aerobic base. Have those ideas had any influence on your development as a runner over the years?
Yeah, well, coming from New Zealand, Arthur Lydiard was the guru, and I read one of his books in 1980. I read one of his first books, when I was at school, my music teacher was my running coach, and he was a total Arthur Lydiard fan, and everybody in New Zealand an Arthur Lydiard fan. And and what it's all about, Arthur Lydia is the key thing about Arthur Lydia is the pyramid, and it's about you've got to develop the aerobic base first, and then the other key thing is about peaking. You can only tend to peak twice a year. That are two key principles of Arthur Lydia. And so what it means is you don't try and put everything into 1 week, and I think that's where a lot of people have sort of done that recently, where they'll have a long run, they'll have a tempo threshold run, they'll do some sort of speed rep work, they'll do some hill work, and they'll have an easy run or two, and they do all those within a week or a 10-day cycle, and that's totally against the Lydiard philosophy. As you develop your base, and the way you develop your base is, it's not really long, slow distance LSD, because when you read the material, and there's some great New Zealand athletes, you know, Peter Snell, Bill Bailey, guys like that, when they were doing their 18-mile, 22-mile training runs, they were banging them out at 6-minute miles. So they weren't doing, you know, long, slow distance. You know, 6-minute miling isn't slow running. But they were doing it at aerobic, so they weren't getting up above what people may call their lactate threshold or anything like that. So they had developed their aerobic system, so they were able to run at a reasonably fast pace without having to produce lactate to be working at such a high intensity. So that's really what the Lydiard's about. And so a lot of my training is very, very easy. I probably do a bit too easy, and so I'm a bit too lazy. But it's all about not doing the tempo and not doing the rep work unless you've got that base, and so it's just working in phases. So you would do a big build up phase, and then you would then move on to maybe do some hill work phase, and then you might do some tempo speed work phase, so then you're building up to peak at a certain time.
Yeah, and certainly one of the things I picked up from the Lydiard system is that he talks about fat adaptation, you know, way ahead of ideas that have been talked recently, because I think a lot of the time here, and some of the podcasts that I've listened to, they'll talk about fat adaptation as though it's something that you eat and a dietary system. With Arthur Lydiard, it was more about getting your body to use fat as a primary fuel source and getting your heart rate down so that your aerobic capability, you know, you could run six minute miles and stay within your aerobic system, and then that was based off using fat rather than sort of glycogen as a fuel source.
Yeah, I mean, the higher the intensity you go, the more carbohydrates you're going to use, but the idea is that the majority of your training is you're not going above a certain, your intensity is not too high, so you are really developing that aerobic system, because the moment you start, see people think that if they do loads of rep work and speed work and stuff like that, it's going to help them do ultra trail running, and I don't think it does. Because it's, you know, what's the point of doing 6-minute miles? When are you going to do a 6-minute mile in an ultra race? You know, I might do that for the first 400 metres just to be a bit silly or something, but you're never ever going to do 6-minute miling. And, you know, it's great fun. You know, don't get me wrong. You know, you go to your local running club and usually on a Tuesday night or a Thursday night, you know, you do some pyramid sessions, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, or you might do 5 times 3 minutes or something like that, and it's great fun, and you really enjoy the session, and you feel like you've really worked hard, and you know, you go to the pub afterwards and have a good time. But does it improve your ultra trail running? No, because it's not relevant to what you're doing in an ultra trail race. So I think, you know, people have to decide what really is it what training will improve their performance, and what a lot of people do, I don't think does actually improve their performance that much for doing these long 10, 20-hour, 30-hour events.
I can confirm that because I've spent the last 2 years trying to get faster at marathon running with the misguided belief that all I needed to do for ultras was slow down a bit or even quite a lot, as I found out on my first 100 mile at the Hardmoor's 110. Although I've had relative success, I don't think I've done as well in ultras as well as I've done in marathon running, and that's because I think I haven't got that big aerobic base and I've done far too much speed work related to marathon running, which doesn't really transfer to ultra running.
It's all about the base. I mean, you gotta, and it's all about specificity. So, you know, if you're saying you've been doing speed work, what do you mean by the speed work you've been doing?
Well, for me, I've been doing sort of about 50 mile weeks, and I do a long run. Every other week I do a long run at tempo, so that's sort of 6-7 minute miling every other week doing long runs. And then I do a couple of easy runs and then some out-and-out speed work.
What would that sort of be?
I don't know, you know, sort of 10 by 800 metres once a week. And that's like a really tough session, hard to recover from.
Mm.
It's a standard marathon training plan, like, you know, the PNF marathon training plans. I've been following those, and a lot of those were saying, you know, ideally I would have been doing 75 miles a week, but my lifestyle and time doesn't allow for that. It's just, for me, I'm learning from my mistakes as a relatively new runner that I just foolishly thought that, you know, if you had a base to run a marathon, all you needed to do really was slow down a bit for ultra running, and I didn't really show the distance enough respect, I don't think.
You know, two things there. I mean, it's that exactly what you're saying, like doing those 800 meter reps or, you know, whatever. Is that what you said? You know, 10 times 800 or 10 times 2-3 minutes. That's exactly what a lot of people do because it's great fun and you're really working hard and you get satisfaction from working hard and puffing and blowing. But I don't think it assists you at all, and all it does is it makes you tired, and it means your next day you're exhausted, and the next day after that you're exhausted. And so that's one thing. And the other thing, you're saying you do a long run, and it's a long run at 6 to 7 minute mile pace. Well, that's pretty quick. You know, most of my running I do at 8:30, 9 minute miling pace.
That's what I'm doing now under Lydiard, and to be honest, I'm enjoying my running a lot more. It's, you know, yeah, okay, you enjoy the hard sessions and, you know, you have a drink and have a bragging session down the pub afterwards, but I've actually really enjoyed just slowing things right down and you know, I found that I'm concentrating more on my cadence and form by slowing down, because you realise that if you want to get a bit quicker, it's your form and your breathing and everything else that's more important than just powering through and trying to go faster.
Well, the two things there. One is, performance in ultras is all about rhythm and relaxation and running economy, which I mentioned earlier, which is all related to not fighting the hills, not battling and trying to battle your way through, and you know, that's one thing. But the other aspect is that performance is all about enjoyment. The two are totally interlinked, and people might think, oh, you get enjoyment after you've achieved the performance, but I think it's the other way around. If you are enjoying what you're doing, the performance will actually come. So it's not what people think. Yeah, you perform and then you get the enjoyment. So it is solely about this enjoyment. And you mentioned that you listened to me on the podcast that the West Highland Way, I sort of talked a little bit about enjoyment, but I talk a lot, I've written a lot on my Ultra Stew blog, which talks about the role of enjoyment and positivity and how that influences performance.
And as somebody, you know, finishes at the sharp end of the field and an elite runner, what's your motivation, Stuart, then? Because I think for some people, you know, that their motivation for a race would be to finish, regardless of, you know, you just want to finish, complete the distance. I get the feeling from listening to you and reading some of the things on your blog that winning is a big part of the enjoyment for you. Is that fair, or is it just that, you know, you're a naturally blessed runner and you happen to win and you're enjoying it?
No, I wouldn't say. I mean, I'm quite fortunate because I get the enjoyment from running the course and seeing the scenery and being part of the community and all that, like everybody else. But I also I get the enjoyment from being in a competition, and I do like being in a competition, and I do like racing. But whether you win or get in the top 10 or whatever is sometimes out of your control. And so what my motivation is when I do these races is, so when I cross that line, I feel like I've actually achieved and performed to what I think I'm capable of. And so I have to really know before the race starts, and I have to really reflect on my training and reflect on all of my preparation on what am I capable of achieving in this race, in terms of, it might be a certain time, but that's quite hard to predict because you don't know the terrain or the conditions change. It goes from dry to mud to freezing cold or really hot. So it's not so much time, it's more a perception of how hard am I working during the race, and how much do I ease off during the race. And so how much have I slackened off, have I sort of lost that focus to keep on driving right through. And so that's really what I'm all about, is trying to really do what I'm most capable of doing, what I think I'm capable of doing. And if I do that, then the high result, the first or second or fifth or whatever, will sort of come because I have achieved what I'm capable of. So it's not really, the aim isn't to win a race or to do a certain time. It's to perform as well as I can, and then the time and the race position will come from that good performance. If that sort of makes sense.
No, it does. I entered a local marathon, the Northeast Coastal Marathon, last year, and that was a race actually where I had, because I classed it as a low-key race, I had a very different mental attitude to that race, and I turned up. My only thing was, well, I'll just keep the leaders in my sight, and I'm going to keep it easy. And I went and run my first ever running race, and that was a fabulous feeling. You know, when I started running 3 or 4 years, I had no dreams of ever winning a race, and yet, of the races where I've done better, I think it's where I've gone in with less expectation and more realistic goals and listening to myself more than the big races where I've got myself all hyped up and probably more listening more to the hype of what I want to do rather than what I really know I'm capable of.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that affect performance, and when it comes to these longer events, you know, marathons and longer, it's really what happens in your mind which determines how you perform. And that can be whether you're angry, whether you're nervous, whether you're excited, whether you're bored, whether you're tired, you know, whether you've been in an argument, all these things, whether you're hot, whether you're cold, whether it's running through an industrial estate, whether it's on a beautiful sunny day, all those factors will determine, influence your performance.
Yeah, when I was looking on your website earlier, Stuart, I don't remember you talking about this in the West Highland Way podcast, but you talk about a concept called the race focus energy fatigue model. How does that fit in with how you set your mental preparation for pacing a race or what you expect your achievements to be in any particular race?
Yeah, I had given lots of thought to what is it that makes me slow down during an ultra race, and I've really given it some thought, and I've done loads of reading of the physiology and the physiology which most people will believe and read is that it's due to glycogen depletion, or it's due to lactic acid and stuff like that, because that's what used to be written, and everything was nice. You know, people would run the marathons. They would collapse at the end of the marathon, and they'd measure their glycogen and blood glucose, and it seemed to correspond that you get fatigued in a marathon because you run out of glycogen. But that was the days when they did it on water, you know, when there are no carbohydrate gels. Nowadays, you can just take on the carbohydrate during the race, so people don't fatigue because of glycogen depletion or low blood sugar and stuff like that. So the question is, what is it that makes people fatigue? And there's some clever people out there who are doing some research, and they're really looking into it in the last 5 years. And it's what they're beginning to show, it's the brain, the mind gets tired. And that is actually what causes the fatigue. And there's been some great research. And they did some stuff, chap from, who's now at university in Kent, chap called McCora. He got some people to watch movies, videos on about trains, steam trains, for an hour and a half, or they had to do a very intensive brain-sapping task on the computer. So it wasn't physical, it was just they had to really concentrate and do some calculations and stuff like that. And so they did that for an hour and a half, so they had the control just relaxing, watching a movie on steam trains, and this brain-intensive task. Then they got them exercising, and right from the very start of the exercise, those who had that brain-demanding task, their perceived exertion, so that's how hard they were feeling, was a lot higher than those people who had been watching steam trains. But yet, their heart rate, their blood lactate, their oxygen, everything was exactly the same, but their perceived exertion was a lot higher, and they fatigued a lot sooner because they were mentally tired. And if you think, back to your last ultra race, you know, what is it that made you slow down? You might say, oh, it was my muscle cramping, or the damage in my legs was so sore. But then why does that make you slow down? It makes you slow down because you're having to concentrate so much. Oops, you're still there. Oops.
Still here.
You're having to concentrate so much to sort of deal with that muscle pain, that discomfort in the legs, and that drains your mind. So after so many hours of doing that, it's sort of like you're just mentally exhausted. And I call it this race focus, because when you're racing, it's a race, okay? So you're trying, meaning a race means you're trying to get the best out of yourself. You're trying to challenge yourself to get to that finish line as quickly as possible. So that's what I mean by race. It doesn't mean you're having to race against other people. You're really just challenging yourself. And to do that, you've got to really focus and concentrate and keep on sort of demanding, okay, let's keep on going. But that takes a lot of effort. And then after so many hours of doing that, it's sort of like, oh, I can't do it anymore. And that is what makes you slow down in an ultra event. And that's what I call, you've run out of your race focus. And so I call it the race focus energy. And people will finish a marathon or talk about their ultra performance and say, oh, I ran out of energy. I just ran out of energy. And they think they're talking about biochemical energy like glucose or glycogen, and it's their nutrition they got wrong. So nutrition gets blamed for everything. Oh, that's the energy. But it's actually what I call the race focus energy. They just, their mind got exhausted, and that's what caused them to slow down. So it's not actually a physiological reason. The physiology will contribute to it, the fact that there's muscle damage and stuff like that, and that causes the mind to have to focus harder. But it's actually I have this model where you've got so much race focus energy, and the moment that runs out, you slow down. So that's a sort of a long a long response to that question. But you know, if you come back to sort of is that, you know, you want to expand on some of that, because I've sort of gone on a bit, but
No, I think I can follow that. I mean, if you took it that everyone was on the same baseline level, for example, because I think some people have much bigger bases than others, and that has an impact on when you start to feel tired. I know for me, I think it's about the 7 or 8 hour point into a race, whether that be a 50 mile or 100 mile or 100K race. I've started to realize something starts to happen in my mind rather than my body that's starting to say, right, you're starting to get tired now. What are you going to do about it? And it's at that stage, then we know people say that ultra running is more about in the mind than in the body. That for me, it's about the 7 or 8 hour mark that the demons start, and the doubts can start. And whether if on a good day, I can brush them aside, and on a bad day, cramps might follow if I didn't get rid of them quickly.
You talk to most people who have run ultras, and I think most people will agree that how you perform is all in the mind. But then you ask them, how much physical training do they do? And they'll say, oh, they do 50, 60, 70, or whatever miles a week, 30 miles a week, so there's so many hours. And then you ask them, how much non-physical training do they do? If it's all in the mind, how much mind training do they do? Do you do the same amount of mind training if you're doing 10 hours physical? And it's more about the mind, should be doing more mind training than physical training. And they go, oh, what is mind training? And they've never ever given it a thought. So what my training is all about, and the reason I tend to perform reasonably well in these ultra events is because, yes, I'm only doing 40 miles a week physical training, but I'm doing 60 miles a week equivalent non-physical, which people might call mental training. So, I do 40 miles in my shoes and 60 miles in my mind. And so in total, I'm a 100 mile a week trainer, but only 40 if it's physically.
Can I just take a guess at some of that then, Stuart, then? Because for me, a big part of the mental preparation is that I like to recce the route. And if I haven't recce the route almost in total, it leaves doubts in my mind, and I don't like doubts. Is that the sort of example of something you might consider as mental training, as a very basic example?
Yeah, exactly. What you're trying to do is you're trying to make sure when you're running and at the race that there isn't any uncertainty. If there's any doubt, it makes it more difficult. So, for example, if I said to you, I want you to run as hard as you can, but I'm not telling you how far you're going to go. You would have no idea whether you're going to be, could go off at 7 minute mile pace or 10 minute mile pace. Because of that uncertainty, you end up being really cautious, right? So I could say, I'm going to want you to run as hard as you can, and it's going to be somewhere between 20 and 30 hours of running. Well, that's a huge 10 hours of uncertainty. Or I'm going to say, I want you to run, but it may be over smooth ground or it may be over rough ground. You don't know until you get there. And so, again, there's all this uncertainty. And all that uncertainty acts at the subconscious level. It acts beneath your actual consciousness. And that uncertainty will make the perceived effort harder for the actual pace. So if you can remove that uncertainty for the same amount of running pace, your perceived effort to run that running pace will be easier. Even though physiologically it's exactly the same, just because you've got a lack of uncertainty, it will be easier. So in terms of part of the race preparation, in terms of the non-physical training, is making sure you know exactly how long you're going to be running for. What sort of terrain are you going to encounter? Is it going to be hilly? Is it going to be flat? Is it going to be nighttime? Is it going to be daytime? Are you going to be running on your own or running with other people? Will you have your friends and family supporting you at different stages to boost you to have some communication with? So all these things you need to consider before you actually get on that start line. So all of those factors mean that when you get to a problem in a race or something, it starts getting difficult, you've already thought about it. And what I do a lot is I do visualizations, you know, massive hours and hours of visualizations, because I said just a minute ago, you've got to know whether you're going to be running on your own or running in a group, or if it's going to be sunny or hot. Well, you don't know that, so you have to visualize every single possible scenario off that race. So you've got to go through in your preparation, okay, I'm now going to visualize running this 100-mile route, and I'm going to be in a group of four or five people. I'm now going to visualize it, and it's going to be pouring down with rain. I'm now going to visualize it, it's going to be ultra hot, and I'm totally in the lead on my own. And so you can imagine how long it takes to visualize running 100 miles, and then you've got to do it 20 times with different scenarios, how long it takes to do this non-physical training. So, and that is what contributes to performance, a combination of non-physical and physical, and it's all about the body and mind working in harmony, and that's what it's all about. It's not about banging out 100 miles a week. It's not about doing hill reps. It's not. I mean, that's a part of it. Don't get me wrong. You've got to do that. You're not going to get around something like the Lakeland 100 if you haven't done physical training. But how many people do the non-physical training? And I was listening to Mark Lathwaite, the race director, was chatting on a podcast, and he talked about what he sees as race director is, and there's a massive dropout in both the, especially the Lakeland 100, there's a massive dropout. I think it was close to 50% this year. And what he sees is that the athletes, the runners, have really focused on the physical, but they haven't given much thought to what happens when the wheels start falling off, or, you know, and they're dropping out. And he said something like, they are so much more physically tough than mentally tough because they just haven't done that mental preparation. So you know, again, I've sort of rabbited on a bit there, but I think that's a really important aspect in terms of the training. On my blog, I talk about total training, and it's that integration of the body and mind.
To me, that's one of the things that's fascinating about trail and ultra running. I think, to be honest, Stuart, I mean, I think the ultimate test of endurance running is still probably the marathon, that the physical test of what the body is capable of. I think what's more interesting about the longer distance event is it's more than just pure running ability that determines where you finish in the field and then how you get on. And that's one of the big fascinations of it.
Exactly. And you mentioned earlier about something like dealing with the demons, and these demons, you know, I interpret that as something like this sort of, I have arguments going on in my head, and there's one part of my mind is saying, oh, what are you doing this for? Slow down, you're going too hard, you're going to damage yourself, or you're going to blow up and all this rubbish. And then I have the other part of my mind saying, no, this is what it's all about. I'm challenging myself, I'm trying to extend myself, push myself beyond what I usually do. And so it's that conversation, and when you're doing an ultra event, there's a lot of time where those conversations go on for hours and hours and hours, whereas in a marathon, you know, you might be running 3, 4, 4.5 hours, and so you haven't got that same internal dialogue. Plus, in a marathon, you tend to have other people around you more, whereas in an ultra event, although you might have one or two people nearby you are basically in your own world trying to deal with these, which some people may call the demons.
Yeah, no, I had to do quite a few. When I took part in my first 100 miler earlier this year, I had to do quite a few deals with myself to finish the race. And in the end, the only way I convinced myself that I would finish was that I told myself that if I didn't finish, I knew I would have to come back and try again. And at that stage, I was lying to myself somewhere, I think, because I told myself I would definitely never do this again. So as long as I finished, I would be fine. I would never do it again. And if I didn't finish, then I'd have to do it again. And that's it was that just went on forever. It, you know, hours and hours and hours in my head, and I did finish, and for about 2 months I kept to the promise that I wouldn't do it again, and now I'm thinking that I will.
So I mean, you mentioned one thing there. It gets really important that because what happens is when you're during these races, these arguments will be saying, "Well, stop or slow down. What are you doing this for?" And so before you get on that start line, probably it's really, really, really important that you know why are you doing it. What are you hoping to achieve, and how important is it for you? And if you haven't got those questions, you know, what do you want, why do you want it, how much do you want it? If you haven't got those three questions really clearly ingrained in your head, then you haven't got a ready response to fight against their argument trying to get you to slow down. So that's all part of the non-physical preparation as well. And it's quite, I mean, it's taken me years to work out what is an appropriate race goal. What is an appropriate, what do I want from this race? And I went from thinking about times and finishing places. I went about, simply enjoying it. But you've got to have, what do you want? It's got to be measurable during the actual race. So you've got to be able to, sort of, as you're running it, 2 hours, 3 hours, 16, 15 hours into the race, you've got to be able to say, what I'm doing at the moment, am I achieving what I said I've got to achieve in this race? And if you can't measure it that way, then it's a useless goal. You know, so something like, I want to enjoy myself, which in some ways it's really important you do that, but then, well, am I enjoying myself? Yeah, I'll enjoy myself by going slow. I'll enjoy myself by going fast. You know, it's great scenery. It's lovely countryside. So having that as a goal isn't appropriate. It's got to have a clear goal, what you want to achieve, which you can evaluate during the event to see whether you're still on task. And if you're not, you've got to do something about it. But if you can't evaluate it, how do you deal with it? You know, so that's, I think, a really important part, as well as this non-physical training.
Yeah, I think I had a very loose goal for my 100, which was just basically, I thought it's the sort of thing you were supposed to do as an ultra runner, and that was a shit focus, if you excuse my French. It was just stupid focus, and that's where I think I had my mental struggles. I was delighted to get a top 10 finish, but I had really wanted to get sub 24 hour and the Hardmoor 110, and I was 4 hours outside of that. So part of me was delighted that I'd finished, and that really was my only goal, to finish, but part of me really wanted to do sub 24 hours. So that's my mental battle, is that next time I put my foot on the start line of the Hardmoor 110, I want to have it completely clear in my head. That's the main reason I'm there, and that's what I'm there to do. I had that conflict, like I said, the demons was of my own creating, from having very woolly goals about why I was even on putting my foot on the start line for 100 miles for the first time.
Yeah, so it's one about having woolly goals, but then the other thing is, say you might have a time target, 24 hours, but then you've got to break that down and say, what do I need to do on the day to ensure I do that? And then you've got to go further back. Okay, if I want to achieve this on the day, what do I have to do in my preparation and my training to actually be able to achieve that on the day? And then, you know, I'm coaching an athlete next year, coaching an athlete at the moment, and his goal is to, he's signed up for the Lakeland 100. He got his entry in okay yesterday, where they sold out very quickly, and he's doing the Lakeland 100 next July. And so I've sent him some homework to do, and I says, okay, you've got to clarify. And so his first thing is to clarify what he wants to achieve in the Lakeland 100. And then I've said, okay, to get to that point, what are you going to have to achieve in April next year and February next year and, you know, November and your marathon in October? So he's having to really go to the, he's got the end point. He's been really working on that to try and to identify what does he actually want. He says, I just want to knock some hours off his time. And I says, well, you've got to be more specific than that. what exactly do you want? And then it's then working backwards. Okay, that's in 47 weeks' time. Okay, what are you going to do in 40 weeks' time, 30, 20, 10, 5 weeks' time? So it's all about, and it's not just, we're not just talking about the physical training here, you know, because it's actually more about the mental training, you know, the goals, the expectations. What do you expect from yourself? What will indicate that you are actually performing and performing at a satisfying level? So, you know, you cross that line and you feel like, yeah, I'm happy with that. And, you know, you talked earlier about, do I do it to win? I mean, I've won many races and I've crossed that line and I thought, oh, that was rubbish, you know. And the first time I won the Lakeland 100 was a prime example. I crossed the line in 24 hours, 10 minutes, and I was going so slow for the last 10 hours. It was unbelievable, and I was really angry with myself, crossed the line, really disappointed, really angry, and then everyone was saying, oh, well done, you've won. And I was sort of like, huh? I've run less than what I think I'm capable of. And so, and that's what's so good about ultra trail running is if people can get their goals right, it doesn't matter whether you're finishing the midfield, end of the field, doesn't matter. The placing's totally irrelevant. It's what you feel you've achieved in terms of what you set out. You know, did I really focus the whole way, or did I just ease off the gas and really slacken and walked when I shouldn't have? And that's what it's all about. So it's not actually, although you are in a race, it's more about a competition against yourself.
Reminds me to come back to a point I was going to ask you earlier, actually, Stuart. You obviously you got a much faster time this year than in 2010, and I know you were toying with the idea of doing more mileage. Would you say it's been more of an adjustment in your mental attitude to running then since 2010?
Yeah, than physical. Yeah, exactly. I did a massive blog post after the Lakeland 100, and it all talked about my preparation for the race. And actually, I did increase my mileage. December, January, February, I did something totally I'd never done before. I was banging out 100-mile weeks, which was, you know, totally foreign from my usual 40 miles a week. But that was way back in December, January, February. I then went back to more sensible training for me, and then I actually got injured and I didn't run at all for 6 weeks, all of May and half of June I didn't run at all. But during that time, because I had this Lakeland 100 as my key focus race, I thought, well, if I can't do any physical training for 6 weeks, I'll really ramp up the non-physical. And so I was basically the equivalent of 100 miles a week non-physical training. I was reading loads, I was making notes, I was doing spreadsheets, working out times and stuff for each leg, and people might say, well, why do you do all that? And sort of gets back to earlier, I'm removing uncertainty, I'm getting ingrained at the subconscious level how long I'm going to be running for. And what I really finally got right was I got my race goal right. I knew exactly what I was out to achieve in that Lakeland 100 this year, and it was simply I wanted to not slacken off one single bit. I wanted to remain focused. I wanted to really over exert myself so when I crossed that line, I could say, no, I didn't slack it. I didn't take it easy. I really extended myself the most I could. And that was my sole goal. And the second thing, I went into that race without any fear. I decided, I've done this twice before. I know the course, you know, every single path, every single little turn, rise. I know every single bit about that course. I'm just going to go out hard and just go hard the whole way. So it was just a totally different mind. The goals, getting the goal setting right, this non-physical preparation, and plus, I was super fresh from doing hardly any physical training, and I think that was a big factor as well. One of the faults of most people is that, you know, most people doing this endurance running, whether marathon or ultra running, is that they're always in a state of fatigue. They don't actually probably realise that they've always got this overall tiredness, and because I didn't run for 6 weeks, and I only barely ran for the next 6 weeks leading up to the race, I was just jumping out of my skin. I was totally fresh. It was unbelievable. So it was a combination of the two that led to the, nearly taking 2 hours off, off my time.
Yeah, you talked about a couple of things there I want to come back to, but we're running out of time slightly. But I think I'd like to talk to you about in another podcast about your pacing strategy, because that is fascinating. But I think we've not got time to give that true justice. You've mentioned coaching, and it's more of a personal angle for me as well. I tried an online coach, and for me it was an absolute disaster, and it's possibly my fault that I just didn't understand how to work with a coach with being new to running. Could you give a little bit of an overview of how coaching would work with yourself, Stuart?
Yeah, well, what after I won the Lakeland 100, it's 5 weeks ago now, I was going on Facebook and reading everyone's race reports on what they did. It's quite good to get to read and sample what other people's experiences were, and there was a lot of stuff I was saying, what are they doing that for? Why would they do that? And I was thinking all the time, heck, I wouldn't do it that way. And I'm not saying my way's the best way, but it was sort of like there was things that just, and I realised that I've got lots of what I think are reasonably good ideas. and I've got lots of experience from 35 years of running, and I thought, well, actually, maybe I should be sharing these a bit more. Yeah, I shared them on my blog, but that's just in a written format. So I'll set up this coaching. And so I've just called it Stuart Mills Online Coaching or Stuart Mills Run Coaching. And I just put it on my blog, and I've now got 5 new athletes just started in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And what I do, I start off, have a really big chat on the phone for about an hour and a quarter to find out what their background is. And then we do email communication, and I email them what they sort of need to do or some homework to do. You know, like one guy, I sent one guy off and says, okay, you need to read Charlie Spedding's book. You know, that's your non-physical training for this week. Read Charlie Spedding's book. And another guy was, you had to go get yourself a physio because, you can't run with niggles, so get yourself a decent physio. And he wasn't doing that. So it's all about the total everything. And one guy drives 90 miles a day, and so he tries to catch up in the weekend, so he does 2 big runs in the weekend and less in the week, and so it's a whole battle the whole time. So I try and get the whole picture of what they're about, and then we do email, and then they can chat to me for half an hour a week. They book a slot for half an hour, and we can chat on the phone about how things are progressing. So it's a combination of email and phone conversations. So that's sort of what I've just set up. Like I say, it's a new thing for me. And I thought, if I was an athlete, I'd like to be able to talk to someone on the phone, but I'd also like to be able to just type it out, because it's useful often when you sit down and you're typing, and it just takes longer to type things out. So it takes, you're processing it more, and so, you're reflecting on your races, and so you're typing out how you went in that race, and then it's just part, the reflection is a massive part of your non-physical training. So that's sort of how I'm doing it. Like I say, I've only been doing it with these new guys one of them was just last Friday I spoke to him for the first time, and some for 2 or 3 weeks. And I think it's working well. They seem happy, and I'm pretty happy, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, well, I think that's a fantastic resource you've built up there. You know, you've got 35 years of running. And I also like the fact that you're making it specific to the individuals. I think the system I was using, it felt very generic. You know, you've mentioned already, that one guy is running 90 miles a week and somebody else needed to see a physio. So it does seem like there's a high degree of personalization there with your clients.
Yeah, it has to be, because not everyone's the same. You know, some people have got only been, you know, one guy's only been running for 2 years, and I tell you what, he's going to really perform in next year's Lakeland 100. You know, he's just got to raise his self expectations. You know, he doesn't realise he's got this amazing potential. So you got someone like that, and then you got another guy who races every weekend, and it's sort of like, do you think that's wise? You know, so I'm having to sort of, I don't like to tell people what to do, but I like to sort of give comments and get them to think, okay, by racing every weekend, how's that going to allow you to peak? And it comes back down to, you know, what we talked right at the start about Lydia and his ideas about you have a pyramid. And if you're racing every weekend, you can't peak. You're never, ever going to get the best out of yourself. And so one of the questions I ask these guys is, what do you want to achieve? Do you want to just get the enjoyment from going to races and performing semi-okay, but you get lots of enjoyment because you're going to lots of races and performing semi-okay? Or do you really want to get the best out of yourself so you get mega enjoyment, but it's going to be in fewer races because you're going to have to cut down the races? So it's totally individualized. It has to be, because some people have got the time, and this geezer that travels, you know, hours in the car every day, he's doing 12, 13 hours a day work, so he hasn't got the time, you know. So it's all totally individual. And there's no one, what I've learned is there's no one secret, no one formula to performing in ultra events. It's what you need to, you've got to work out what your weakness is and then deal with that. And some person's weakness will be totally different to another person's weakness.
That sounds fantastic. And I know for myself, I feel like I've hit a bit of a wall with my training. And I must admit, one of the reasons why I was looking forward to doing the podcast tonight is I thought, well, I'll get to talk to you for an hour and see.
I'll send you the bill later.
and see how it might work for coaching. But I think you've got yourself a new client there. So after the call, I'll become one of your fee-paying clients, because that sounds like a fantastic service you're offering, Stuart. And I mean that genuinely. We'll have to set up a call for later in the week.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I do it because, you know, like I mentioned right at the start, what's so unique about the Lakeland 100, the Lakeland 50, it's the community there. It's just such the buzz in that hall. I mean, I'll just go back to the Lakeland 100 and the Lakeland 50. When everybody finishes, it's just amazing, you know. And Mark and Terry and all his other helpers, a massive team, they've created such an amazing sort of situation there, that they have marshals to bring people in from the finish line, which is out in the drive, and they bring them into the hall, and then these marshals make an announcement, we have another Lakeland 100 finisher, and everybody who's in the hall stops, turns around, stands up, gives them a massive applause. So everybody in the race is treated like a champion. And that's what, you know, to be part of that community is just so good. And so if I can add my bit to that community by helping people raise their performance, then I get the satisfaction of doing that. So yeah, that's why I do it. I mean, it's and also I learn, and it will improve my performance as well, because as I'm thinking about what have I got to do to get this person getting better, I reflect on what I've done. So I'm using my experiences and transferring it to them.
That's fantastic, Stuart. And once again, I think you're acting as a brilliant ambassador for the Lakeland 50 and Lakeland 100 race series, which this show is dedicated to. So thanks.
Thanks. And sorry if I've gone on a bit, you know.
No,
ultra, it's a podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. This is often a 3 or 4 hour length podcast. So my deadline is tonight. Is my ever loving wife and our wedding anniversary tomorrow night. So I'm going to have to start to wrap things up. I just want to pass on a massive thank you, Stuart, and hopefully we can catch up again at a point in the future for your upcoming races, and I'll be happy to talk about, you know, how my training is progressing under you as a client as well. That'd be fabulous.
Yeah, and we can chat about pacing and stuff, because that's quite
interesting. We'll have to, the pacing thing is fantastic. I've set off with a couple of races with your pacing strategy in mind. Unfortunately, on my hard mode 110, I had a crew that were determined to slow me down at every point, but we'll come to that in the pacing episode.
Yeah, there'll be a bit of stuff otherwise.
Right, well, it's been fab, Stuart. Great to catch up with you, and congratulations on your fantastic victory this year. It's well deserved.
Okay, no, it's been great to chat.